Good morning or afternoon, everyone, and welcome to EMForum.org. I am Amy Sebring and will serve as your moderator. We would also like to extend a special welcome to any tribal members who are with us today, and we are very glad you could join us. We will be providing some instructions as we go along so you can relax and participate with us. If you need assistance, you may use the hand-raising button on your participants panel, and Lori Weber will try to help you via the chat panel. Now, today we are going to hear about highlights from the 9th Annual Tribal Public Health Preparedness Conference that was held in the Pacific Northwest just a couple of weeks ago. As noted, a primary goal of the conference was to share strategies for improving regional emergency preparedness, response, and recovery. More than 250 delegates representing 30 tribes and Native organizations from Washington, Oregon, Idaho, Montana, and Alaska were present, along with partners from local, state, and federal agencies. And today we will hear from some of the conference organizers. First, for the benefit of our newcomers, we will begin with an overview presentation, and then we will proceed to your questions or comments. We will provide further instructions just before we start the Q&A, but we ask you not to submit your questions until we do get to that part of the program. We are making a recording, which should be available later this afternoon, along with a copy of today's slides. And the text transcript, as always, will be posted early next week. Now, if you're not on our mailing list, you're more than welcome to subscribe from our homepage, and then you will get a notice when these materials are ready, as well as notices of future programs. Now, it's my pleasure to introduce John Scott, who will serve as our facilitator today. John founded and directs the Center for Public Service Communications and has worked for many years on disaster risk reduction both here and abroad. He is an enrolled member of the, and pardon me if I mispronounce these, the Tlingit and Haida Indian Tribes of Alaska. I am going to turn it over to John to introduce our other guests today with whom he worked to plan the conference. But you can certainly look at today's background page for further biographical information on each of our guests and related links. Welcome, John. Thank you very much for being with us today. I now turn the floor over to you to start us off, please.
Thank you, Amy, and you did pronounce it well. I am, in fact, Tlingit, family from southeast Alaska. I won't waste time about me, though. We have some excellent guests here today, so we'll just jump right in. The relations between the U.S. government and federally recognized tribes are prescribed, but often challenging. And relationships between states and tribes can also be challenging and complicated. We have with us representatives today who have been involved in and responsible for transcending these challenges and, as pertains to public health emergency preparedness, have developed some model programs that I think would be valuable for you to listen to and particularly for those tribal members who might be with us. Today we have Joe Finkbonner, who is Executive Director of the Northwest Portland Area Indian Health Board, to represent the tribal perspective, John Erickson, who is Special Assistant to the Secretary of the Washington State Department of Health and Director of Washington State's Public Health Emergency Preparedness Response Program, to represent the state perspective in its relations with tribes in the region, and an outgrowth of this commitment and hard work of these two and others is the Northwest Tribal Emergency Management Council, whose executive director, Linda Zambrano, is also with us. Linda is also filling a double duty. She is interim director of the National Tribal Emergency Management Council. And what we're talking about is a tribal public health emergency preparedness conference that took place successfully a couple of weeks ago in Washington State. And without further ado, I'll turn it over to our first speaker, Joe Finkbonner. Joe?
Thanks, John. Good afternoon, everyone. I want to start by giving a little bit of an overview of our organization, the Northwest Portland Area Indian Health Board, talk about our primary function in the states that we serve, and then specifically to zero in on our model that we have with the state of Washington. Next slide, please. The Northwest Portland Area Indian Health Board was formed in 1972 to promote self-determination in order to improve the quality of health care delivered to the 43 federally recognized tribes in Idaho, Oregon, and Washington. We work in four priority areas for those tribes. Legislative and policy analysis, we'll examine different levels of legislative development and assess the impact to the member tribes of our board. We also have some health promotion and disease prevention projects that we administer locally to our tribe, but we also do training and technical assistance for those health promotion and disease prevention projects, as well as we operating a tribal epidemiology center where we do data surveillance and research. And part of that epidemiology center as well is bringing folks in to demonstrate and instruct them on how to use statistical software like SAS in order to mine the surveillance projects that we've hopefully worked with them on so they can better evaluate their programs and their health promotion efforts. Next slide, please. Our board, our 43 delegates, we have one delegate from each member tribe, meet quarterly with a state, not only amongst our own selves, but also we meet with state and other officials on a quarterly basis in both, in all, Idaho, Oregon, and Washington. We provide guidance to the state and feds and others on how to work with our tribes, and also how to integrate some of their policy so that it is friendly to tribally operated health programs. We review issues from HHS, Indian Health Services, and assess their impact on tribal operations. Our quarterly meetings, including developing positions, oftentimes resulting in resolutions where we'll give formal feedback to the various levels of governments on legislative and budgetary issues. Each year we provide a budget analysis on the president's budget. We also give positions on health promotion and disease prevention programs and explain what our projects and programs are doing at some of the tribes that we may not be working with. And then we also will review publications and data research issues that have been impacting Indian health and examine the health status of our member tribes, either individually or as an aggregate group for the Portland area. Next slide, please. This just gives you a visual of the Portland area. As I said, we serve Idaho, Oregon, and Washington. There are 43 tribes. There are 9 tribes in Oregon, 5 in Idaho that we serve, although in actuality there are 6 tribes in Idaho, and it's where the 6th tribe is on the southern border of Idaho and overlaps into Nevada, and they are served by the Phoenix area rather than the Portland area. So we serve only 5 of the 6 tribes in Idaho. And then in Washington, there are 29 federally recognized tribes. And I'm going to zoom in on the Washington and talk a little bit about the next slide, please. The demographics of Washington and how this model emergency and public health preparedness program began in the Northwest. In Washington, there are 29 federally recognized tribes that are small by most standards. They range in size from the smallest being the Ho Nation out on the peninsula of the Washington coast of about 100 members to the largest being the Yakima Nation, which is in central Washington near Mount Adams with about over 14,000 members. Yeah, the 2000 census identified the American Indian and Alaska Native population in the state of Washington at a little over 112,000, and they comprise approximately 2% of the state's population. To put this in context, nationally there are over 563 tribes, and the American Indian population as a single race indicator comprised less than 1% of the overall U.S. population. It's slightly higher than that if you look at multiple race indicators. And I want to, that transitions me into how we got this program started. About 10 years ago, we had a partnership with the University of Washington Northwest Center for Public Health Practice to do two assessments that were contracted to them by the Washington State Department of Health to, one, do a capacity assessment for our tribes and look at the infrastructure of our tribal programs, and also a workforce development assessment and look at the training topics that our tribes felt that they and our tribal public health officials felt that they needed in order to fully be able to ensure public health preparedness. Out of that, we determined that a conference was needed, not only to address some of the workforce development issues that were in place, but also one of the priority issues was identifying and mobilizing the community partnerships. And that we felt was lacking, and even though Washington tribes have a strong relationship with the state, the local relationships were not as consistent. And so the state of Washington, along with our board, decided that we wanted to hold a conference and start the networking and partnership discussions before anything catastrophic happened. And in that, we put together an agenda, organized our first public health preparedness conference about 9 years ago, and the rest is history. I'm going to turn it over to John Erickson and ask him to explain the state of Washington's role and how that plays into this overall model.
Thanks, Joe. Good morning and afternoon to folks. And next slide, Amy, please. This morning, I'm just going to give you a little bit of background about Washington State specific, and then talk about this year's meeting, the ninth, as Joe says, the ninth annual meeting that we just recently held in the last couple of weeks. So the first slide, Amy, can you change the slide? There you go. That's the state of Washington. It's not a very large state, but this is a kind of a busy slide, so I apologize for that. But we have about 6.5 million people in this state. And like Joe said, we have 29 tribes. We have 39 counties. We have 35 local health departments. Some of the local health departments are multi-county. But we have informally organized into 9 regions, and that's the color groupings that you see there. And the reason we did that it was for planning for public health emergencies. We thought it's all about neighbor helping neighbor and sharing resources and collaboration. And we wanted to try to strengthen the regional aspect of Washington, like some of the other states are already have a regional model. Next slide, please. So this slide of the state of Washington just shows the 9 regions and the 29 tribes. You see some of the tribes are rather large on the east part of the state, and they also border on multiple regions and multiple counties, which make the collaboration all the more important. And, of course, this map is a little bit misleading because these reservation boundaries, there's also tree rights that significantly expand the areas of tribal influence much beyond the reservation boundaries. So that makes, again, a reason for the collaboration. Next slide. Like Joe mentioned, we have partnered over the years with Joe's group, the Northwest Portland Area Indian Health Board, and in the early years, the Northwest Center for Public Health Practice at the University of Washington to begin thinking around these regional and state meetings on tribal coordination and emergency planning. We also partner with Linda's group, who you'll hear from in a few minutes, the Northwest Tribal Emergency Management Council, and the American Indian Health Commission of Washington, and a number, a laundry list of organizations such as the State Hospital Association, the State Pharmacy Association, all 35 of the local health jurisdictions, state and local emergency management agency, and the list goes on. Many people have joined into this collaboration to move the needle on emergency planning. Next slide, Amy. So specifically, this year we had the ninth annual Emergency Preparedness Conference, the title Continuing to Bridge the Gap Between Emergency Management and Public Health. Now, when we started this effort back in 2004, we just were focused on public health, like Joe mentioned, and for a number of years, we just had a Public Health Emergency Management Council, or a Public Health Emergency Management Conference. As time went on, we recognized the importance of broadening that to emergency management in general to increase the collaboration. And with Linda's help and her group, we expanded, I think, in 2009, I think, was the first collaboration. Maybe it was 2010, where we broadened it to public health and emergency management. We bring together tribal, state, local, and federal agencies, many of the state representatives, governments in Region 10, Idaho, Oregon, Washington, Montana, British Columbia joins us, Alaska joins us, and of course, many federal partners also. This year we had it at the Squaxin Island Tribe Conference Center, a beautiful facility in Shelton, which if you don't know where Shelton is, it's near Olympia. And if you don't know where Olympia is, Olympia is about 60 miles south of Seattle. Everybody knows where Seattle is. So it was a wonderful location. This is the second year in a row that we had this here, and something like 300 people were registered this year, and I think there was something in the range of 250 were actually present. Next slide, please. I just wanted to touch bases on a couple of the important issues that we discussed this year, and one of the biggest issue was the 2012 canoe journey, which had just completed at the Squaxin Island Reservation just a week or two before our meeting. And for those of you that don't know about this event, it's a wonderful event that involves tribes from Alaska, British Columbia, and Washington in a canoe journey down through Puget Sound. And I think 100 canoe families this year participated, and the weather was wonderfully cooperative. It was beautiful weather, and the winds were calm. That, of course, is not always the case in the Pacific Northwest, where it rains more often than the sun shines. So it was incredible piece of work, and we had Keng Choke and Hanford McLeod from the Nisqually tribe talk about some of the planning they did for their tribe around this event, and talk about some of the after action items. There's many emergency management issues related to this, safety issues, public health issues, because literally thousands of people watched from the shore of this canoe journey, where, and every evening where they landed, there was quite a celebration. And then there was a week-long celebration at the Squaxin at the end of this event. I certainly encourage any of you to come to Washington State or British Columbia in the future and participate in this event if you can. Next year, it's at the Quinault Indian Reservation in Washington State. It's hosted by the Quinault Indian Reservation. Two other issues that we had at this year's meeting. We had a specific breakout sessions for each of the state, Washington, Idaho, and Oregon, to talk with the partners that were there about specific state issues, emergency management, public health issues, healthcare coalitions, crisis standards of care, emergency plans, regional and tribal coordination. And it was each year the discussion gets more and more robust, and we have to continually expand the time. It was a wonderful conversation this year. I hosted the Washington State conversation, and it was truly inspirational, because, like I say, each year the conversations get more and more robust, and we move as we move this this needle in emergency planning. The other thing, a high point that I did want to mention, was the fireside chat. Each year, over the last several years, we have hosted a fireside chat between the Secretary of Health, Mary Selecki, the Adjutant General of the National Guard in Washington State, Brett Dougherty, General Brett Dougherty, and tribal leaders. And the thought is to bring, to have a, it's a very small meeting, just to have a discussion between the leaders to discuss issues, priorities, hopes and dreams of where we're going. Each year that discussion becomes more and more robust, and we continue to look forward to that. The Secretary loves to do those conversations because, again, it helps us in the collaboration effort. Next slide, Amy. This is just a picture of Dr. Evan Adams, and you may recognize him. He's quite a famous movie actor. He was he starred in Spokesagles, the American Indian film that was done several years ago, and so that's his name to claim. He's an Aboriginal physician in the Ministry of Health in British Columbia. And in 2009, he was one of our guest speakers because being in the Pacific Northwest, British Columbia, and the Aboriginal tribes in Canada are very much a partner in our conversations as we do this emergency planning. So Evan was with us in that year. Also in 2009, we talked about a mutual aid agreement that had recently been signed from our Olympic Peninsula tribes and local health jurisdictions. That's on the western end, the Pacific Ocean end of the state of Washington. And in that agreement, seven tribes and three local health jurisdictions had come together to sign a mutual aid agreement that covered emergency preparedness activities and how to respond to emergencies. But more than that, it was broader into public health services and how everybody was going to be sharing resources. So those were just a couple of the other top priorities in the last few years in meetings. And in 2010, Linda's going to talk in a couple minutes about her group's role. In 2010 is when we joined with emergency management and it significantly increased the participation by that group. Next slide. Well, I think we all know the funding continues to decline in this effort. We are committed here in Washington State, and I know the other state health departments in the region are also committed to continuing this very important effort into the future as long as the funding continues and allows us to do that. And this year, Linda was able to bring in more resources externally, some private resources. Maybe she can talk a little bit about that. And that will help us move this conference along. Next slide. So that's all I have to say is some contact information for myself and for Gina Yarborough, our Tribal Emergency Response Coordinator.
John,
so with that, I'll turn it over to Linda.
Yeah, John, let me just interject again. This is John Scott again. Just before we move on to Linda, could you mention just a little bit about the Centennial Accord, which is, I think, unique in Washington and something that would be of interest to some of the other state representatives that might be online?
Sure, I'd be glad to, John. In Washington State, we have a Centennial Accord between the tribes and the state government. It's signed and led by our current governor, Christine Gregoire, and all the tribes in Washington State. And it's a formal coming together and agreement between the tribes and state government about the priorities and the importance of working together. Each year, we have the governor hosts a meeting to help develop a work plan for this Centennial Accord. Much of what we do in the area of emergency preparedness and public health is under the umbrella of this Centennial Agreement. It's truly a landmark agreement, and I know most jurisdictions don't have such an agreement, but it has really helped us to improve the collaboration among all of us.
Thanks, John. Linda?
Hi, John. Thank you for inviting us to be a part of this call today. We're honored. Our first slide is a slide that demonstrates building systems through partnerships, and I just wanted to make mention of that particular phrase because when we started our emergency management program, we recognized very early on that much of our staff turns over through the course of time, and one of the things that we did not want to see happen was for us to start down the road of creating emergency management and Homeland Security programs and have those go away because they weren't institutionalized. And so much of what my partners here on the call have been talking about, both John and Joe, have been the collaborative work that's occurred over the last few years in regards to not just building those relationships, but building systems that will carry us through into the future and continue to be able to enhance and better prepare our tribal nations for these events that we face. Next slide. So, again, with this slide, you'll see probably a similar slide to some of those that you've already seen earlier. The important thing about this particular slide is that in John's slide, as he was talking about the regions and how the public health regions are set up, the emergency management regions in the state of Washington are also set up similar. And that's important because we haven't had to recreate boundaries or define separate areas by which we're working within. I use that slide to demonstrate that. Next slide. We put this poll question into our PowerPoint because we like to emphasize for those people that are new to our emergency management programs here in the state of Washington that it was just a few short years ago that there were no emergency management programs in the state of Washington. And over the course of the last 8 years, we've been able to help stand up 27 of our 29 tribal nations to establish points of contact, clear through to full-blown offices of emergency management that are now formally recognized by the state of Washington. Next slide. And so a brief history in regards to the NWTMC and how we began. We started out in Region 1. We were a collaborative effort of 8 tribes. We came together. Originally, there were 7 tribal chiefs of police and myself as the emergency manager of the Tulalip tribes. And we came together to take a look at creating emergency management and what would need to be done in order to do that. Next slide. And as we came together and started learning, you can imagine that we faced an extremely large learning curve. There were a lot of different components to emergency management, different components to Homeland Security. And we're going to flip through these next couple of slides here just to demonstrate the law enforcement component, the equipment, the training, the exercise, the critical infrastructure. I like this next slide, NIMS Alphabet Soup, because we had an entire new language to learn. And not only did we have a new language within emergency management to learn, but our public health partners also had a separate language. And so as we started to bring our partners together, we learned that there was a whole new language that we all needed to learn to be speaking with one another so that we could be better communicating. Next slide. So the mission of the NWTMC has been to build these partnerships and develop comprehensive emergency planning documents. To work together to share resources, knowledge, and skills, and to assist in coordinating exercises. And we've tried to provide a network of expertise, culturally relevant, and as it pertains to our emergency management and homeland security. Next slide. So this slide demonstrates early on, within the first few years of development of the NWTMC, we had added 17 new tribes just within the first couple of years as our program developed and grew. As you heard John and Joe talk about, we started out as a Washington-based program, but since then we've expanded our charter and bylaws to include Idaho, Oregon, and Alaska. Next slide. Here our Tribal Emergency Management Council partners include both state and federal partners, and we've got a list of the different partners that routinely attend our NWTMC meetings and provide input so that we can continue to expand on those partnerships and hopefully be able to continue to institutionalize the importance of emergency management and homeland security in tribal country. Next slide. We also have many regional partners because, as we all know, that our emergency management programs are important to be implemented at the local level. We need to be working with our local and regional partners, even sometimes more importantly than our state and federal partners, when we have incidents that are occurring on our lands. And so we've strongly encouraged the building of relationships with both our local and our regional partners. Next slide. Our organization is a nonprofit, so as you heard John talking about, we do have a unique ability to be able to go out and solicit funding that can help us expand on our efforts. Our efforts are really about building infrastructure and capacity within our tribal nations, and so we do have a unique ability to be able to assist our tribes in writing grants and bringing dollars into the individual tribal nations, as well as for the conference's purposes, being able to go out and solicit vendors and be able to raise some additional funding to pay for some of the additional items that we like to bring forth in the conferences. Next slide. And so what we do, I included a few more slides than I would typically include, but I wanted, at least for the purpose of the presentation, for those people that are listening, to have a full list of all of the different services that we're able to provide. And so we can move through a couple of these slides quickly, but I'll just mention a few of them. One of them is assisting in the development of the emergency management plans and the grants writing. We've literally helped bring millions of dollars into the state of Washington in our grants writing, and most of those dollars have gone directly to the individual tribal nations to help them to develop that infrastructure and that capacity. We also assist one another in raising awareness of homeland security issues and mandates, and we educate our communities through our CERT programs, our Medical Reserve Corps programs. Next slide, please. We also provide a link to regional, state, and federal homeland security and emergency management programs. As all of us are aware, even right now as we sit here and speak, Hurricane Isaac is coming ashore of our lands, and here, even in the Pacific Northwest, we're maintaining levels of communication with our tribes that are down in Louisiana, as well as with our state and our federal partners, monitoring the situation and ready to assist in any way that we can in continuing to promote the lines of communication throughout our partners. We provide templates for many of our different plans, and we maintain essential databases as well. And our databases are comprised of tribal members that have taken training, so that we're able to take that training and add that culturally sensitive and relevant component to it and bring that back out to tribal country. Next slide, please. We also maintain a website as a conduit for sharing information. We provide resources for our tribal clinics. This is where we really tie our public health piece in because we help to educate our local partners on issues that are very unique to tribal country, such as quarantine, isolation, and jurisdiction and sovereignty. Our conference has become a really great forum in which we're able to take these conversations and these discussions, and from that we've been able, I think for all of us, to better define what public health emergency preparedness truly means, who needs to be doing what, and how we need to continue to collaborate in times of need. Next slide. Some of our Washington State tribal programs, specific to Washington State, we've stood up a statewide CERT program. We have a statewide Medical Reserve Corps program. We have a statewide communications project, also our Critical Infrastructure Protection Project, and we've created a cadre of NWTMC trainers. Next slide. We've continued to build a statewide network of CERT teams that are now involving our tribal youth, and we're very proud of our tribal youth that are taking our classes, and we'll continue that message into our future generation. Next slide, please. Here I'd like to just share this very unique incident of a story. This is a training that we conducted a few years back, and it was a training between the Sauk Squatter Tribe and the City of Darrington. And this was a training in which the chairperson of the Sauk Squatter and the mayor of the City of Darrington came together and took the class together. Our scenario was a mock flooding incident. And the important thing to note about this particular training, we brought 250 people together from 37 different agencies, and we conducted the mock training. 3 weeks later, the reservation did flood. And 3 weeks later, the chairperson of the Sauk Tlettl tribe and the mayor of the city of Darrington were able to sit down at a table, share resources, share personnel, and much better be able to manage that incident. Next slide, please. Again, the Medical Reserve Corps really ties back to our public health programs here in the state of Washington. It was very critical for us to have our own Medical Reserve Corps people because we needed people that were very familiar with the tribal culture. And when we first started working with our county personnel and we just kind of felt everybody out in regards to what their level of understanding of the culture was, it became very apparent that it would be very beneficial for us to be able to bridge that gap as well. And so we've continued to work on our statewide Medical Reserve Corps. Next slide, please. This is a great van that was donated by the American Red Cross, and it's fully outfitted for us to be able to access if we need assistance with communications. Next slide. We've also done a great deal of work in regards to emergency backbone communications, and we have quite a few people in the state of Washington that, and a much more extensive list than this now, of tribal members that have obtained their ham radio licenses and are able to communicate during times of need. Next slide, please. The important thing to note about the critical infrastructure in the state of Washington is that the tribes do own nearly 10% of the land mass, although our tribes will argue that we own 100%. The state of Washington has a figure out there that says close to 10%. And with that, nearly all of the Washington state critical infrastructure is located within or within close proximity of our tribal nations. And so that includes our international border, our international shipping lanes, our ferry system, our naval bases, our oil refineries, the Grand Coulee Dam that's pictured here over at the Colville Nation. Our tribes are providing security for our critical infrastructure on a daily basis. And so, again, demonstrating the importance of us all working together with our tribal nations to bridge the gaps and make sure that we're doing the best job that we can to provide homeland security for the homeland. The next slide, please, is just a photo of some of our NWTMC trainers, again emphasizing the importance of having that cadre of trainers in Indian country. I'll apologize for this last slide because this last slide was an announcement of a previous conference. That slide has not been updated yet. But with that, again, I'd like to thank John and John and Joe for conducting this call today. And Amy, thank you for flipping through slides. And I think we're all prepared to answer any questions should anybody have any for us today. Thank you.
Yeah, Linda, maybe I could ask one more question of you before we go to that, and that is a little bit about the expansion to the national effort.
Oh, absolutely. As we have continued to grow in the Pacific Northwest and really do a great deal more outreach with our Alaska partners, we learned that there are other groups that are in the nation that are formed similar to the NWTMC but have not gone quite to the extent that we have in regards to formalizing the relationship, creating those charter and bylaws, perhaps even going as far as obtaining their 501c3 like the NWTMC has done. Becoming more aware of those groups that are out there, we've done some outreach and we've started working with some of those consortiums to help provide information, perhaps even a model by which we have been able to move this program a little bit further down the road. And what we have found is that the return has been just tenfold in regards to the information sharing and the things that we've been able to learn from one another. And so we have currently outreached to the Montana Working Group. We're working with the Michigan Group. We're working with some tribes down in California, Arizona, and Texas. As you heard, we've done some outreach to Louisiana and are maintaining lines of communication there. What our group has chosen to do is create this executive board of directors for the purpose of defining what that road will look like into the future as the group creates the National Tribal Emergency Management Council. So the formal executive board of directors was announced at our conference this year, and those representatives will be defining and creating and moving forward with a national effort by which it creates a forum. It'll be a forum by which all of these different organizations throughout the nation will be able to continue to share information and share those best practices. Thank you for asking, John.
Sure. Thank you, Linda. Well, if all this was a show and tell, I think that it was a good one. But I think that there's far more to it. I've scanned the names of the participants of this morning's call and recognize some of you, but not all. And so I don't know exactly what the connection any of you might have with tribal governments in your communities. But each of these three presentations represents a unique and excellent model that that should be, I would encourage, should be looked at for other regions and other communities. As most of you know, these EM forums are recorded and will be available online. I would encourage you to share what you've heard today with your colleagues, particularly encouraging some of the tribal communities that might not be represented on the call today to check in and listen. All of the contact information for Joe, John, and Linda is available. Certainly, I'm available too, but I would encourage you to contact the three principals. I think I'll turn it back over to Amy Sebring, thanking the EM Forum and EIIP for this marvelous opportunity, and to then work with Amy right now to respond to some questions that you might have. Amy?
Excuse me. Sorry, that was an inopportune call. Thank you very much to all of you. It sounds like you're doing some very exciting work, and the fact that you're taking the leadership of this is just, I do think, probably a model for the rest of the country. Okay, for our participants, if you would like to make a comment or ask a question, you just, in the Q&A panel, not the chat panel, please select host from the little drop-down, if there is a drop-down, and then type your question in there. And I will moderate that. I will read the question aloud, and our guests will respond over the bridge. And for those of you that may have attended the conference or work with these groups and are here with us today, we'd certainly be happy to hear your thoughts as well on the experience. We already begin now, so please do enter your comment or question at any time. I've got one from Isabel McCurdy, and she asks, and I was thinking of you, Isabel. She says, being from British Columbia, how many tribes from here attended your conference? Linda, can you take that? Do you have any idea?
I don't have an answer to that question yet because I'm right in the midst of doing our final report and just acquired the sign-in sheets on Friday, so I apologize that I can't give you an exact number. Although I do know that we did have some partners that were here from Canada.
Very good. And I think, didn't you have a list of attendees posted on the conference site, maybe?
On the website, we do have a list of all of those parties that originally registered for
gotcha.
The conference. Yes, it's already there on a link under the 9th Annual Tribal Conference.
Yeah, and we have links to that the conference page as well as to the regional and national council pages on our background page and the other organizations.
And I might mention that all three of the principals are working on, as I think John might have mentioned, a continuing cross-border consultation that is coming up yet again in a 2013 round that will involve provinces and First Nations communities in Canada, as well as tribes and state and federal institutions in the U.S.
Very good. I did want to ask, Linda, you mentioned that you're putting together a report of the conference?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. And do you have any idea when that's going to be available?
Oh, I hope to have it actually done by the end of this week.
Oh, very good.
Yeah, and the final report will include the sign-in sheets. It'll include a full overlay of the expenses of the conference and funding sources and the vendors that we will be thanking for helping to support, again, a tremendously successful conference between all of our partners.
Very good. I have a question from Ava Jean. She says, thanks to all for a fine presentation. Linda, you mentioned training tribal youth. How do you structure or offer emergency management or CERT training? Is it through the schools?
Actually, what we've been doing is through our tribal summer youth programs. Many of our tribes employ our summer youth throughout the summer, and we've been working with some of the coordinators of those programs, and they've been very easily able to slip in a full-blown CERT class and be able to provide credits to those students for taking the classes. I'm very proud to inform everyone that even at our annual conferences, we now have a cadre of tribal youth that attend the conference from the Colville Nation, and they're able to acquire credits for school for coming to the conference and assisting us with registration and logistics.
Terrific. Dennis White says, for Linda, have you run a functional or tabletop exercise with your MRC members yet, that's the Medical Reserve Corps, to a point where they were staged at a rally point? And if so, were tribal members well represented there? May contact you later.
Very quickly, yes. The answer is yes. And when I indicated the exercise that we conducted in Darrington with the 250 people from the 37 different agencies, we actually activated a Medical Reserve Corps and contacted four separate reservations to send their Medical Reserve Corps personnel. And in some of the photos of the exercise, you can actually see our Medical Reserve Corps personnel on site.
Amy, in addition to that, the State Department of Health sponsors annual exercises, and each year more and more tribes connect to those public health exercises, infectious disease type exercises that we invite all in the region to participate in.
Oh, that sounds like a good program. One of the questions that occurs to me is, you know, since the event in Japan and the Fukushima meltdown and everything, I would expect I know you all have a long history of you know, tsunami preparation, but I was wondering if you were all focusing some renewed efforts on that. And I was looking at the map and those tribes on the coast.
This is John. Maybe I can start off on that. During that event, there was very routine collaboration between local government, state government, federal government, and the tribe, the coastal tribes, in Alaska, in BC, in Washington, and in Oregon. It was probably the first time we really had to kind of kick into action this recent collaboration we've built over the last few years. And so there was lots of discussions about. What is the what do the radiation meetings readings mean, and our tribes, what are the levels on the coast versus inland, and things like that. So that was during the response. The debris issue continues to be discussed at all levels of government, and it's pretty well set up in the coastal states all the way down to California. And really, Hawaii is connected to the conversation too. So folks from the tribes and local and state and federal government that are participating and watching for debris or cleaning up debris. I think all the states have websites now, and they have 800 numbers, I think, for folks to report debris also as it hurt, as it hits the coast. It hasn't it hasn't really impacted much of the coast yet. Some big items like a barge in Oregon and a ship off British Columbia came across pretty quickly. But the vast majority of the debris has yet to come. It will probably be here over the winter and into next spring.
One of the things I wanted to ask y'all, and I'd like to bring Joe back in if he's still with us. I'm sure he is. And
right.
Start off with Joe is, can you just tell us, you know, some of the challenges you have faced in developing the public health emergency preparedness side of it, vis-a-vis, you know, the daily ongoing needs of these communities? I mean, how do you get them interested when they may feel they have more pressing concerns?
Thanks, Amy. Good question. Of course, challenges are the obvious ones, like resources, as John had mentioned, that's constantly declining every year. But, some of the recent events that have happened the last couple of years have certainly piqued interest in terms of people dusting off their plans. H1N1 certainly heightened people's awareness about the necessity for public health preparedness and making sure immunizations are up to date. And John can talk more specifically about this year's communicable disease, and that's the pertussis outbreak or pertussis epidemic that has hit Washington State. Those certainly are right on the tabletops and desktops of all health programs of the tribes in the Northwest, and that sort of reinvigorates interest and preparedness on how to mitigate these types of public health issues that approach our jurisdictions.
Yes, nothing like an event to get.
This is John Scott again. One of the interesting anecdotes relative to the H1N1 issue and tribal involvement is the whole idea of the development of culturally and linguistically appropriate information for not just tribes but for many communities. In the CDC guidance for H1N1, the vaccinations were not to be given to young children and elders or elderly people, when in most Native communities, the elders are a respected force, and to ignore providing service to the elder, even if in other communities it might be a reasonable thing to do, is frequently not the best practice in Native communities. And so the idea of over time looking at what are some of the national models and making sure that they recognize various cultures within within the U.S.
John Erickson, would you like to tag on to the question?
We had many discussions, as you might imagine, in Washington State and in all the states about the CDC priority groups. And in the end, there appeared to be enough flexibility to allow groups to vaccinate who they wanted to. Now, I agree with Joe that further work with the federal agencies, and specifically CDC, will help that for any future outbreak to make that flexibility clear enough. But it was certainly a topic of discussion during the event.
And Linda, can you add on in terms of the challenges for establishing emergency management and, you know, sustaining it in tribal communities?
Well, I think that both my esteemed colleagues have addressed the question very well, but what I'd like to add to that is that I think that through our annual conference, we heard John mention the Fireside Chat, and last year the Fireside Chat provided a really beautiful informal forum by which the Secretary of the Department of Health and our tribal leaders were able to sit down at a table and discuss these very issues. And I think that really productive things have come from the conference that we collectively as a group hold on an annual basis.
Good.
If I could add to that, Amy, you know, one of the things that I will say about the state of Washington and the tribes is that sometimes the dialogue gets you know, very challenging because we may disagree on things, but the relationship that the state of Washington and the tribes have is actually a longstanding and is very good, and it has really led to that conversation where we get to the meat of things and try to develop real solutions. And I'll use H1N1. It didn't work as well in terms of the vaccine distribution in Washington as we had hoped and as we thought it would. But yet in our fireside discussion, we were able to have that frank and open conversation with Secretary Selecki and her commitment to try to renew and reinvest in that relationship with the tribe has really gone a long ways and really is I think, a model more so than everything always going right, but always being able to have that conversation and consistently work on systems. So it's a QI project in the making.
Very good. Okay, I have a question from Kelly Merritt, and this is probably going to be the last. Oh, well, maybe one more after this. She asks, how do you approach training or workshops when you connect with tribes on islands, such as the San Juan Islands? Is it harder for these tribes to participate with state-level exercises? And I forgot who mentioned the exercises.
This is John. I can address that. It's harder for any of the groups, government groups, tribal groups that are on islands or in remote areas to participate either in our annual meeting or in any of these exercises. I mean, that's very true. And so we continue to look for funding to empower folks that really want to participate to fund this, fund travel wherever we can so they can participate. We also have a pretty robust video conference network in Washington State between local health and the tribes and state health. And as time goes on, we are using this more and more to have virtual tabletop exercises and things like that so people do not have to travel.
I've got a comment here from Elisa Jones, and she said she attended the NWTEMC on behalf of My State USA. It was her first time at that conference, but we are no stranger to the Regional Alerting Project. It was great to meet Linda, see the fantastic work she and her team are doing. And then a good wrap-up from Ava Jean, last one. She says, I would think your success and models used in the Northwest would be of interest broadly across the country. Have you thought about sharing this through some national organizations such as IAM, International Association of Emergency Managers, NEMA, the National Emergency Management Association, and public health-related conferences? And Linda, you spoke a little bit about, you know, your national efforts. So are you reaching out to some of these organizations?
We are. We will be in attendance at the International Association this year, and I believe that is going to be down in Florida in October. And we have also stood up the National Tribal Emergency Management Council website, so that can be found at the URL of ntemc.org.
And also on our background page, and we will have the link in our transcript.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Well, with that, I think it is time to wrap it up for today. On behalf of Ava Jean, myself, and all our participants today, and those who will see the material in the future, thank you all very much for sharing this information with us, and a special thanks to John Scott for helping us arrange the program. And we do hope you have enough to go forward and have an even bigger and better conference next year.
Thank you, Amy.
Now, attendees or participants today, please, before you go, just take a moment to give us a little feedback via this form. Again, if you're not on our mailing list, please go to our homepage to subscribe to get our announcements if you wish, and you can also find us on Twitter and Facebook. Don't forget, we are offering CEUs for attending our programs, and you can find a link to that information from our homepage. Again, thanks to everyone for participating today. Have a great afternoon and a great Labor Day weekend holiday. Until next time, we are adjourned. Thank you, everyone.